Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamp to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its independent affiliated stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, Portraits of a People, Selections from Yiddish Literature, was written by Harold Flender and is the second in a series entitled A Yiddish Omnibus.
The first thing that can be said about the Jews is that they're human beings. It was Mark Twain who said that. And if Yiddish literature as a whole makes any point, it is that. It shows us to be geniuses and ignoramuses, heroes and villains, angels and devils. In other words, we are human beings. And as such, we share in the brotherhood of all mankind. Take our proverbs. Nobody knows how far back they go. Some of them may be among the very first examples of Yiddish literature.
A falsche matbea falif minit.
A bad penny never gets lost.
A halbe emes is a ganze lügen.
A half-truth is a whole lie.
A schlechte rod skrippet am ärgsten.
The worst wheel squeaks loudest.
A schlechte sholem is besser wie a guter krieg.
Better a bad peace than a good war.
As a leib schlaft, lass ihm schlafen.
When a lion sleeps, let him sleep. If some of these proverbs sound a bit familiar, you're getting our point. There is a universality found in the wit and wisdom of all proverbs. Proverbs, of course, are only a small part of any literature. The earliest literatures generally start with folklore, and Yiddish is no exception. The Yiddish language itself is 1,000 years old, and Yiddish literature a little younger. The earliest Yiddish literature was heard more often than read.
He's here, he's here. The storyteller's here. What story are you going to tell us today?
Today I'm going to tell you the story of a very smart rabbi. This rabbi was always studying. One day he left his room for a moment, then returned to his studies, only to find his eyeglasses missing. Perhaps they were between the scrolls he was studying. No. Maybe they were somewhere on his table. No. Surely they were in the room. No. Since this rabbi had studied the Talmud, he began figuring in Talmudic fashion. Where are my eyeglasses? Let us assume they were taken by someone. They were taken either by someone who needs glasses or by someone who doesn't need glasses. If it was someone who needs glasses, he has glasses. And if it was someone who doesn't need glasses, then why should he take them? Therefore, this is a problem involving one who needs glasses and has glasses. One who either took someone else's because he lost his own, or who absent-mindedly pushed his own up from his nose to his forehead and promptly forgot all about them. For instance, me. And putting his hand to his forehead, the rabbi saw that that was exactly what he had done. There were his eyeglasses on his forehead. Praise be the Lord, he said, that I am trained in our ancient manner of reasoning. Otherwise, I would never have found my eyeglasses.
At first, the Yiddish language was not meant to serve as a vehicle for scholarship. That was the prerogative of Hebrew. The purpose of Yiddish as literature was to provide light, recreational reading, mainly for women. For hundreds of years, the title pages of Yiddish works often carried this note.
Beautiful and instructive for women and girls.
Until the middle of the 19th century, Jewish intellectuals had a condescending attitude toward Yiddish. They considered it chiefly a language for the uneducated. Then, suddenly, a strong reaction to this condescending attitude set in, and Yiddish literature entered what may be termed its golden age, with its center in Eastern Europe.
I saw black. My head began to spin, and I fainted. My companions had to throw a bucket of water over me before they could bring me to my senses. They stood before me and asked what was the matter. Had someone become sick at home or, heaven forbid, died? I could not answer. How could I tell them that I was sick at heart for a beast in whose company I had spent the happiest moments of my life?
The words of Mendele Mocheir Sforim, the father of modern Yiddish literature, the patriarch of its golden age.
My real name was Sholem Jacob Abramovich, and I was born in the province of Minsk in Russia in 1835. At the age of 17, I broke away from a life of pious scholarship and joined a band of wandering beggars with whom I visited many Jewish communities in the Pale.
In his story, The Calf, we see deprivation suffered by Jewish boys like himself, who had been taken away from the fields to spend their days indoors, bent over religious tomes. As a child, the protagonist of the story is free to roam the fields with his beloved pet, a young calf.
"Come, my beloved," I would cry, picking up the rope that hung around her neck. "Let us go forth into the field." The green grass was a revelation. Everything was alive. We met God's creatures, previously unknown to us. Every manner of bird and insect. They flew through the air, glided in the grass, singing and humming and buzzing. My eyes were dazzled by the bright colors of the flowers. I felt alive myself, alive inside. For once I could breathe freely. I turned somersaults in high spirits. Tired, I stretched out on the grass, belly up, and squinted into the sun, which smiled at me as though to say, "Well, young fellow, having a good time?"
But then, the calf and the boy both grow up. The boy goes off to the yeshiva, and the calf grows into a cow, and has a calf of her own. The boy's mother writes him the good news.
"Yes, your calf has dropped a calf, and now she's a proper cow. And after selling her milk in the market, there's some left for us. Yes, no one can deny it. It was really a tender calf. The slaughterer paid me a good price for her. I'm sending you a few gold coins and a piece of broiled liver."
But the mother doesn't realize that what is good news to her is a tragedy to her son. He cannot stand the thought of the firstborn of his beloved calf slaughtered.
I lost control of my bodily functions. I could no longer distinguish between dream and reality. Sweetmeats hung over my nose, made up of the calf's roasted liver and lungs. I was being slapped, pricked with needles. Burning cold scorched my pocket. 2 gold coins sprang out. I looked at them, and a pair of blood-swollen calf's eyes stared back at me. I am blinded by colors. Red and blue and purple. I wipe drops of blood from my forehead.
A powerful story by the father of modern Yiddish literature, Mendele Mocheir Sforim. Shocking in its realistic detail, but at the same time allegorical. The death of the calf represents the death of spontaneity and youth.
And now let's talk about more cheerful things. Tell me, what news is there about the cholera in Odessa?
The words of Sholem Aleichem, the greatest humorous writer in Yiddish literature, and spoken by one of his most popular characters, Tevye the Dairyman. In the golden age of Yiddish literature, Sholem Aleichem stands forth
as its great natural genius.
I was born in Russia in 1859 and began writing in Hebrew at the age of 15. Later, I switched to Yiddish. My real name was Sholem Rabinovich. My pen name, Sholem Aleichem, means peace be unto you in Hebrew. It is a traditional greeting among Jews.
There is much humor in Sholem Aleichem's writing, but at the same time, with the laughter, also come tears. His best-known stories are those built around the adventures of Tevye the dairyman, who is blessed with seven daughters he must marry off. One of his daughters, Hodel, is studying with a young university student of whom Tevye does not approve. Riding through the woods one day, Tevye comes across his daughter and the student walking along with their heads close together.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Good evening. And what's the latest news of the war? How do you happen to be out here this time of the day? What are you looking for the day before yesterday?
Father, you can congratulate us.
Congratulate you? What's happened? Did you find a treasure buried in the woods, or were you just saved from some terrible danger?
Congratulate us. We're engaged.
What do you mean, engaged?
Well, don't you know what engaged means? It means that I'm going to marry her, and she's going to marry me.
When was the contract signed? And why didn't you invite me to the ceremony? Don't you think I have a slight interest in the matter? Getting married without matchmakers, without an engagement feast?
What do we need matchmakers for? We arrange it between ourselves.
So? That's one of God's wonders. But why were you so silent about it?
Well, what was there to shout about? We wouldn't have told you now either, but since we have to part soon, we decided to have the wedding first. You see, Reb Tevye, this is the reason. I'm about to go away.
What?
I said I'm about to go away.
When are you going?
Very soon.
And where are you going?
That I can't tell you. It's a secret.
All right, a secret is a secret. But explain this to me, my friend. You were a man of such, integrity. You wallow in justice. So tell me, how does it happen that you suddenly marry Tevye's daughter and then leave her? Is that integrity? Is that justice? It's lucky that you didn't decide to rob me or burn my house down.
Father, you don't know how happy we are now that we've told you our secret. It's like a weight off our chest. Come, Father, kiss me.
The third great name from the golden age of Yiddish literature is Isaac Leib Peretz.
I was born in Poland in 1851 and first worked as a lawyer. At the age of 27, I published my first book, a volume of poetry, and from then on devoted myself increasingly to literature.
Peretz has long been considered the guiding spirit and architect of modern Yiddish literature. His most famous story is Buncha Schweig, Buncha the Silent. Buncha the Silent is the meekest, most unpretentious, and least complaining of all human beings. After his death, it was an accepted fact that his trial before the Heavenly Court of Justice would be a mere formality. He had led such an exemplary life on earth that no one, not even the prosecuting angel, would dare say a word against him. Present are Buncha, the heavenly judge, and the defending and prosecuting angel. The defending angel pleads Buncha's case.
He never complained, not against God, not against man. His eye never grew red with hatred. He never protested against heaven.
As prosecuting angel, I say never mind the rhetoric, please.
His sufferings were unspeakable. When he was 8 days old, he was circumcised and the knife slipped.
Such realistic details are unnecessary and distasteful. Simply give us the important facts.
Even then, as an infant, he was silent. He did not cry out his pain. He kept his silence, even when his mother died, and he was handed over, a boy of 13, to a snake, a viper, a stepmother.
Irrelevant and immaterial.
In winter, in the bitterest cold, she made him chop wood in the yard, barefoot. More than once, his feet and hands frozen. But he was always silent. He never complained, not even to his father.
Complained to that drunkard?
He never complained. And he was always lonely. He never had a friend, never was sent to school, never was given a new suit of clothes, never knew one moment of freedom.
Objection, objection! The defense is only trying to appeal to the emotions with these flights of rhetoric.
He was silent even when his father, raving drunk, dragged him out of the house by the hair and flung him into the winter night, into the snowy, frozen night. He picked himself up quietly from the snow and wandered into the distance where his eyes led him. Soiled by the filth of a strange city, spat upon by unknown mouths, he was driven from the streets into the roadway, where a human beast of burden, he became a lowly porter, carrying the heaviest loads upon his back, scurrying between carriages, carts, and horses, staring death in the eyes every moment. He still kept silent. Once Bunch crossed the roadway to the fountain for a drink, and in that moment his whole life was miraculously changed. What miracle happened to change his whole life? A splendid coach with tires of rubber plunged past, dragged by runaway horses. The coachman, fallen, lay in the gutter, his head split open. From the mouths of the frightened horses spilled foam, and in their wild eyes sparks struck like fire in a dark night. And inside the carriage sat a man, half alive, half dead, and Bunsha caught at the reins and held the horses. Now, the man who sat inside and whose life was saved, a Jew, a philanthropist, never forgot what Bunsha had done for him. He handed him the whip of the dead driver, and Bunsha there and then became a coachman, no longer a common porter. And what's more, his great benefactor married him off, and what's still more, this great philanthropist himself provided a child for Bunsha to look after. And still Bunsha never said a word, never protested. He never protested. He remained silent even when that great philanthropist shortly thereafter went into bankruptcy without ever having paid Bunsha 1 cent of his wages. He was silent even when his wife ran off and left him with her helpless infant. He was silent when 15 years later that same helpless infant had grown up and become strong enough to throw Bunsha out of the house. He even remained silent when that same benefactor and philanthropist later ran over him with his carriage. Even in the hospital, where everyone is allowed to scream, he remained silent. He was silent in that awful moment, just before he was about to die. And he was silent in that very moment when he did die. And never one murmur of protest against man. Never one murmur of protest against God.
And now what does the prosecuting angel have to say?
Gentlemen, gentlemen, gentlemen. He was always silent. And now I, too, will be silent.
Bunsha, my child, Bunsha. My heart's child, my child, Bunsha. My child, you have always suffered, and you have always kept silent. There isn't one secret place in your body without its bleeding wound. There isn't one secret place in your soul without its wound and blood. And you never protested. You always were silent. There in that other world, no one understood you. You never understood yourself. There in that other world, that world of lies, your silence was never rewarded. But here in paradise, you will be rewarded. You, the judge, can neither condemn nor pass sentence upon. For you, there is not only one little portion of paradise, one little share, no. For you, there is everything, whatever you want. Everything is yours.
Really?
Really. I tell you, everything is yours. Everything in paradise is yours. Choose, take, whatever you want. Whatever you take will already be yours.
Really?
Really. Really. Really.
Well, then. Well, then,
What I would like, Your Excellency, is to have every morning for breakfast a hot roll with fresh butter.
Bunche Schweig, Bunche the Silent, the epitome of meekness and self-effacement on earth and in heaven. We've had Yiddish poetry almost as long as we've had Yiddish. Interestingly, our own 20th century has witnessed a spectacular renaissance of Yiddish. Yiddish poetry commemorating the tragic events in Europe, telling of the wonders of life in America, telling of the wonders of love. Rachel Korn is a contemporary Yiddish poet known for her love poetry. Born in Poland, she escaped to Sweden during the Second World War and now lives in Montreal. We will hear one of her poems in English translation and then in the language in which she wrote it, Yiddish.
I'm soaked through with you, like earth with spring rain. And my fairest day hangs on the pulse of your quietest word, like a bee near the branch of a flowering linden. I'm over you, like the promise of surfeit in the time when the wheat comes up even with the rye in the field. From the tips of my fingers, my devotion pours on your tired head, and my years, like sown acres, become timely ripe and gravid with the pain of loving you. Beloved man.
Ihr bin durchgeweht wie Erd mit frielandigen Regen, und so hängt mein blondster Tag beim klappendicken Defek von dein stillsten Wort, wie die Bin beim Zweig von bliendicke Lippes. Und ich bin über dir wie der Zusag von Schäfer in der Zeit, wenn ein Fell gleicht sich aus der Weiz mit dem Korn. Von meine Spitzfinger trifft Gepreischaft auf deinen lieben Kopf. Und meine Jörn, wie die Beten in dem Feld, wären zeitig reif und ungequollen von Zar dir zu lieben, geliebter Mann.
What does a quick look at Yiddish literature show us? It shows that our literature is involved with love. It shows that it contains proverbs and folk tales. It shows that it contains characters who act with the thoughtless cruelty of the mother in Mendele Mohair's four-rim story, The Calf, and characters as idealistic as the student in Sholem Aleichem's Hodel, as uncomplaining as Peretz's Bunche Schweig, and as mean and crooked as the philanthropist patron in the same story. It is a literature that deals with the mundane and commonplace, and a literature that soars with vivid imagery into the supernatural. In short, it reflects characters and ideas, insights and concerns found in all great literatures. If literature is a reflection of the life of a people, perhaps Yiddish literature proves Mark Twain's contention that the worst thing that can be said about Jews is that they are human.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address for 25 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York, New York, 10027. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Dr. Gershon Weiner, Dean of the Jewish Teachers Seminary and Herzliya Hebrew Teachers Institute, New York City. Dr. Weiner.
Three gifts of Yiddish are lost in the wave of sentiment and the clouds of ignorance that often blur our vision. First, it is true that Yiddish is cherished for its past, yet it has its treasures in the present. It represents a flourishing literature with its creative spokesmen distributed throughout the world. The Yiddish press, theater, and scholarship continue not only in the tradition of former achievement, but also in the service of current needs. Second, it is generally regarded that the literature in Yiddish reflects life in Eastern Europe. Yet the greatest of Yiddish writing is essentially an American product. Its leading men of letters have lived in this country. They responded to America, to its natural environment and social milieu. The encounter with the American landscape, the confrontation with its culture, the interaction with its human resources, all have found expression in the Yiddish novel, poem, and drama. Remarkable, indeed, are the spiritual roots which Yiddish authors have sunk into American soil, while many of our popular writers depict the American nightmare, Yiddish remains the medium for the American dream. If Yiddish writing in the past conveyed the tensions, the passions, and the issues of the East Side ghetto, it reverberates today with the hopes, aspirations, and ideals of what constituted the promise of America. While others have turned to rejection and alienation, Yiddish writers spell out affirmation and identification. To cite only a few examples of the 1960s, Gladstein, Glantz Leilis, and Chaim Grade. Finally, Yiddish is not only nostalgia, it carries a message, an ancient heritage, a recent way of life, and a modern experience provide spiritual values of universal import. The human condition and the Jewish position attain their artistic fulfillment. These are the three gifts of Yiddish. Alas, there's only one school of higher learning, the Jewish Teacher Seminary and People's University, that is dedicated to the preservation and cultivation of the treasures of Yiddish.
Thank you, Dr. Weiner. Our Eternal Life program today, Portraits of a People, was written by Harold Flender and was a second in a series entitled A Yiddish Omnibus. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical introduction. In the cast today were Alan Manson, Gene Allen, Martha Greenhouse, Fran Myers, Martin Wolfson, Peter Fernandez, Guy Repp, John Gibson, Roger DeCoven, Marion Seldes, Elspeth Eric, and David Ross. The narrator, Guy Sorrell. We invite you to join us next week for the third program in this series, The Yiddish Press, An American Primer, written by Moses Rowell. This is Jerry Damon. The Eternal Light is directed by Kenneth McGregor and presented weekly under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.